So for this evening's talk, we received many, many requests. The request which came a long time ago was one again to deal with or to talk about stress. But in particular, I wanted to focus this talk on how to be successful and do lots and lots of things in the world. And become a leader in your field without any stress. How to get lots done without any problem at all in the mind. In other words, how can we use our mind efficiently? And this is something which Buddhism is really, really good on. Simply because as monks we've been meditating for such a long time. But even as a monk, I'm not a lazy monk. Sometimes if you come and visit me at monastery down at Serpentine, you may find me busy working on the roof where I was this morning, and in the afternoon doing the administration work, in between solving everybody's problems when they come and ask me them, and afterwards coming doing some free counseling at Nanamara Center, and then afterwards giving a talk, and then afterwards doing more talking to you. My day starts at 4 o'clock, or like this morning, a bit earlier, 3:30, and doesn't finish till late. How on earth can you do all of that and still have a happy mind? How can you be a high achiever with no stress at all? And it's a wonderful thing to know this. And it can be done. And first of all, people will say, what does a Buddhist monk know about stress? What does he know about responsibility? You just live in your monastery and just have a nice time. Yes, that's what you think. But if you come and actually stay in a monastery and have a look to see how hard a monk works. I remember giving a simile like this earlier on when I was in Singapore, giving a big talk to about 2,000 people. And at the end of the talk, somebody asked a question. It wasn't much of a question, it was more like a comment. And it was very much what I just said. They said to me, how do you, you're a Buddhist monk, how do you know what stress is? No, what you said, in theory it may make sense, but in the real world, where we do have to work so hard, it's much different. What do you know about stress? And then I told him what I'd done that day in Singapore, getting up at 4 o'clock. How many of you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning? And you start working from the very beginning. And that day, I listed all the things which I'd done that day. You know, visiting people in a hospital, you know, doing, because I'm also a spiritual patron of the Buddhist Fellowship in Singapore and director of the Brahm Center in Singapore. That's overseas. This is not my core business, which is right here. All this stuff which I'm doing. And I told an hour by hour account what I'd done that day. And after I told what I'd done that day, to say, look, now I qualify, all the work which I do and get done, I qualify as someone who knows what I'm talking about working hard and dealing with stress. And then they came to the microphone afterwards and they said, wow, I never realized how hard monks have to work in our modern world. He said, you know, I always wanted to become a monk one day, but not now. No. I lost the monk. But, you know, I do work hard, but without stress. And these are the techniques which you can use to be able to be successful in whatever sphere of work you have, but without any stress, so that you can be successful with a smile on your face. And the first thing is, please don't carry around the past. Because every time you keep carrying around the past, what happened? Who said what? Who did what? That carrying around the past takes up so much space in your brain. You've got hardly anything left to do the job of the present moment. How on earth can you perform if so much of your brain space is taken up with working out why they said that, why they did that, all the terrible things which you have done. Look, you can't afford to waste any brain space. The capacity you need to be successful is so great, you can't afford to keep that past. So, the first thing we learn to be successful in life without any stress is to let go of the past as soon as it has happened. To keep nothing at all. To be someone whose suitcase is always empty of the past. You can imagine just how much that would free up your life to really do well in this present moment if we could somehow totally, immediately let go of what has just happened. And if you can't do that, at the very least, can you let go of the bad things which have happened in the past? The good things, actually they don't take much space in the mind, but the bad stuff, all the terrible things which have happened to you in your life. And I get these letters from people, the sort of stuff which happened to them in their past. You know, sometimes the sexual abuse they've endured as kids, the physical abuse they've endured. It's gross sometimes. I just sometimes think, my goodness, what you went through is disgusting, it's terrible, that should never happen to anybody. But even that you can let go of. Why? And this is a challenge which is very strong, but I make this in confidence that I know what I'm talking about. Why do you allow all of that to stop you living in the present? Why are you always a prisoner of that past? You've been hurt terribly, but you don't need to keep on being hurt by remembering that past. You can let it go. And I think I have to let go for a few moments because there's some secret messages coming by. So here we go. There is a secret message coming here. That, oh my goodness me, the car number 1DNI615 is making some mega bad karma. I'll tell you why it's making bad karma. Because it's parked across the driveway, so the nun's car cannot get out. You're keeping the nuns from getting their job or whatever it is. So 1DNI615, please move your car quickly. Otherwise, because of its bad karma, it will get reborn as a bicycle in its next life. Even cars can make good karma and bad karma. So there we go. Now that's all finished with. I'm going to let go of that past now and carry on with my talk to be efficient. Because there are so many interruptions of your life, but they finish with and they're gone. Why do we keep this? Even part of my job of being a monk, you know, that so often I come out at 6:30 and people come and tell me their problems. I don't mind that. Please come and tell me the problems. You know one of the reasons why people like telling monks their problems? Because we're cheap. Usually you have to pay a lot of money to tell people's problems. It's called counselling. I don't know how much they charge an hour, but here you get it for free. It's really good value for money at this place. But more than that, it's part of the job because, you know, knowing the nature of the mind, being around a long time, you understand how things happen. So you can give some wisdom. But in order not to have stress, as a counsellor, we're all counsellors to our friends anyway. To let go of that past took a new dimension when my teacher Ajahn Chah gave us some advice. He said, later on as monks, as human beings, people come and tell you their problems. You have to let them come and unload on you. Unload all of their rubbish. You, said Ajahn Chah, have to think of yourself like a rubbish bin. And let people put all their rubbish inside of you. They talk about their relationships, about their marriage, about their children. Look, that's why I became a monk. So I don't need to worry about wives and kids and businesses and stuff like that. So why do you keep unloading that stuff on me? But I don't mind. The important thing is, he said, Ajahn Chah, he said, you be a dustbin. Imagine yourself sitting up there or sitting here, being like a dustbin. Come on, throw your rubbish inside of me. But to be a dustbin with a hole in the bottom. Now that's the most important part. So you don't keep any. It just goes in and goes out. So when I leave this place, I don't carry any of your rubbish with me. That's called letting go of the past. And it's a beautiful simile that you can be this dustbin for the whole life. Whatever life brings you, it goes in and it's there for a moment and it goes right out the other end. So you keep nothing. That is the trick for having no stress. But what happens usually? Whatever happened at work today, whatever happened earlier in your life, you keep so much stuff in your dustbin. No wonder it's full up. I just saw that we had a dustbin collection, rubbish collection at Serpentine today. Some of those dustbins, you see the workers in our monastery just trying to bash it down on top, trying to get as many bags as they possibly can into these containers. No matter how big those containers are, no matter how many you've got, you always throw up more rubbish and you have to sort of stamp it down to get it in. That's like called stress. You've got so much stuff, especially from your past, no wonder you get stressed out. No wonder you can't have this beautiful free mind which can attend totally to this present moment, to enjoy this moment and value this moment, because there's so much of the past. It's meaning that there's no room left in the dustbin of your mind to fit anything new in. This story came up because, and I told you last week, my mother died, and I've got a picture of her. Somebody got this picture, and I looked at it last week, and it's a picture of my mother with the wombat. Now, the story behind that picture of my mother with a wombat was that every time I visited her from Australia, I brought her a little fluffy toy as a memento. The first time I went from here to London to visit my mother, we took a little kangaroo, you know, like you get at the airport shops, nice and fluffy toy. So my mother, when I'd left, could think, oh, you know, that came from my son, you know, Australian. Quiche, yes, but, you know, women love it. My mum loved it anyway. And so the next time, obviously, had to be a koala bear. After a koala bear, it was a platypus. After a platypus, I got a kookaburra. And the fifth Australian animal, which I brought on my fifth trip to see my mother from Australia, was a wombat. Now, with that wombat, that was the fifth animal. And my mother had this mantel shelf. This shelf in the front room of her house where she put all the important knick-knacks. And she already had on that mantel shelf the kangaroo, the koala, the platypus and the kookaburra. And now she had a wombat to put on there. She couldn't fit it on. She tried to put it on and a couple of the other animals fell off. So she spent about half an hour trying to balance all these animals on this small shelf. And from that experience, I told her, why didn't you throw those other animals away? They've been there for years. Oh, no, I can't. Oh, they're so nice. You know, they mean a lot to me. But it wasn't just, you know, the nice memories she had on her mantel shelf. She also had the bad memories on the mantel shelf as well. The bills from the electric company, from the telephone company, they were also on the shelf there. And they fell off as well. And that gave me the simile of what stress is in life. You carry too many things in your mind at the same time. There's too much stuff on your shelf. And you try and put something else in and it just won't fit. Things fall off. When they fall off, that's called a nervous breakdown. That's when you get totally angry or depressed. You just can't fit anything more in your brain. You know what that feels like? That is not the way to deal with stress. Actually, that's not the way to deal with life. So just have one little animal on the shelf at a time. It's called the present moment. Let go of all that past. You don't need to keep dealing with it. In your brain, there is something similar to my favorite button on the computer. It's called the delete button. I love that delete button. I press that more than anything else. Somebody sends me an email, not interested, delete. Oh, and then it's finished with. You don't have to answer it then. So free. And don't think, oh, well, aren't you supposed to, you know, answer all those emails people send you? Say, no, that person didn't have enough good karma. Delete. It's all got into karma, so it's not nothing to do with me. Delete. But that is in the brain. There is a delete button in the brain. If you can only find that to let go of that past. Why do that? Because that leaves you free to achieve in this moment. And the other thing which people find difficult is we worry so much about the future. We spend days just worrying what's going to happen next. That takes up even more space in our brain. No wonder you can't achieve in the present moment and enjoy this life. The story which I was telling people recently, it's an old story, but it's a brilliant story. From my life, when I was doing the final examinations at Cambridge University, that's where I did my studies, 1972, Natural Sciences Tripos, final exams. Now, final exams, they really meant that, final. Everything else in the whole time you did at university counted for absolutely nothing. You got your degree or you failed on one series of examinations. And those examinations in natural sciences that year, 6 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, one after the other. Morning examination, 3 hours, afternoon, 3 hours, 1 hour for lunch. I don't think Amnesty International was formed at that time. If they'd have found out, that was torture. You know, 3 hours, 1 hour lunch, 3 hours, 6 days in a row. And the worst of that was everybody was telling me that my future depended upon those examinations. You know, if you did well, you'd have a wonderful life. If you failed, you'd be stuffed for the rest of your life. If only I had known I was going to become a monk, I wouldn't have worked so hard. I didn't know that at the time, so you know, I bought into what other people told me. I really worked hard. But my trick was, and this is how you deal with stress. This was a stressful situation for me. How I dealt with that was using basic tricks of meditation. I'd already started meditating about 2 or 3 years when I first went up to that university. So I never had any lunch for those 6 days. I had a big breakfast, a nice dinner in the evening. At lunchtime, I went back to my room, maybe 5 or 10 minutes from the examination room, and I meditated for half an hour. Now, this is what happens. As soon as I sat down, the first thing which came into my mind was the morning exam. How did I do? Did I do that question correct? We all know how stupid that is. The examination paper is in. Right or wrong, it's too late to change it. It's obvious, isn't it? You should let it go. Let go of the past. This is not the time you can do anything anymore. It's easy to say, but I trained, I could do that. I could let go of that very, very important exam in the morning. And this is what you could learn in a place like this. It doesn't matter what has happened in the past. You can't change it. The examination paper of your past is in. It's a waste of time thinking about it. Good or bad, you can't do anything about it. I could let that one go. So the next thought, I was not at all concerned about the morning paper. The next thought which came up in my mind was the afternoon exam. Should I get out of my meditation, get out a book and start studying? In the last minute, just in case. And of course, if you remember your studies, every time I did that, whatever I looked at half an hour before the examination never ever came up Never. Total waste of time. And it was a waste of time. Because this was the time I'm supposed to rest, not work. And if you're worried about the future, you can't stay in this present moment and do the preparation necessary for success in the future. And that preparation was resting. If you don't know how to rest, you will fail again and again and again, because you don't know how to prepare your mind for the challenges it faces in the future. I had to let go of the future. Because I trained in meditation, it was easy to do. Even though it was important, what I thought was a life-defining moment, those afternoon examinations, I could totally forget about them and stay in the moment. So that was called present moment awareness. When I put it in the context of an important part of my life, you can understand how relevant it is. But what happens next shocked me, because when I stopped thinking about the past, which for me was a morning exam, the future, the afternoon exam, I found I was physically shaking. Now look, you know, I go up here every Friday and talk to people, and it's looked upon on the internet, thousands of people. I go on live TV. I'm not a nervous person, but at that time I found I was physically shaking. The pressure, the final examinations had got to me. I was nervous. What shocked me even more than being nervous was that I hadn't noticed it before that point. I'd been so fixated, you know, with the future exam or what I'd done in the past, I was totally unaware of the present reality of my body. And that shocked me. And from that moment on, I learned why many people get sick. They get sick because you're not aware of your body. You're so up in the future, so up in the past, so busy. You're not here with your body listening to the signs. When I got into that present moment and saw I was shaking, it was pretty easy to relax the body, exactly as I taught you here at the beginning of the meditation. With mindfulness and kindness, the body totally relaxed and all that shaking stopped. The next part of that meditation, when I let go of the past, let go of the future, the shaking had all stopped, the next thing I noticed was how tired my brain was. How totally worn out it was. I compared it to like a tea bag which had already been used. No juice left. An old used tea bag. That's what my brain felt like. And again, those experiences told me again why a lot of depressions and negativity, where they come from. Most of the people in this room, if you'd only notice the state of your brain, would probably know it's really tired. It just really needs a rest. And because I noticed the need for my brain to rest, I could just keep it not working for now 10 or 15 minutes, really relax it, keep it still. So by the end of that meditation, all the energy had come back to my brain. I was awake, alive, clear, energized. And I still remember my friends, after the examinations, they commented that I was the only student who went into that examination hall in the afternoon with a smile on my face. I could do that because I was relaxed. And that's why I did really well. In a stressful situation, one of the first stressful situations I encountered in my life, I dealt with it in such a way that I could smile to the afternoon examinations. That is a great example of how to deal with stress. From that time on, I'd use that technique throughout my life. Many times I've worked so hard that I do get incredibly tired. Sometimes my schedule, the monks see that and they said, I can't do that. And I tell them the trick how to do that. I remember just going to Singapore once. And, you know, Friday night here, I think it was an overnight flight to Singapore. And as soon as you land, off teaching. And that particular time, they had this concert on. And, you know, there was a matinee concert and one in the afternoon after. And what I was doing was just playing myself in this, you know, Buddhist-type play. And after sort of playing myself in the morning, they all went out for sort of dinner, or, you know, just pre-dinner, sort of after lunch. I don't know what they called it, but they eat any time in Singapore, like most of Asia. I don't know why they call it lunch, dinner. It's just they eat, and that's all it is. So anyway, they went off to eat. And, of course, being a monk, you couldn't have any dinner. And I was just so wasted, so tired. And you know, there was another performance coming on in half an hour. You had to front everybody and entertain them and say something wise or smart. That's what you come up here, so I can say something wise and smart. And otherwise you think, you know, you come and wasted your Friday night. So every Friday night the pressure is on. I've got to say something smart and, you know, wise, so you can actually think, oh, it's worth coming. Anyway, there the pressure was on and I was just so exhausted. So that's exactly what I did. I found a quiet place. It was actually a locked exit, so no one could go through. And I just sat down there and meditated. Let go of the past, let go of the future, and you could feel the tiredness in your body and in your brain. And just rest with it. Don't do anything. Make peace with it. Be kind to it. And the energy starts coming back again. And so the afternoon when I came out of that half an hour meditation, I could perform really to a very high standard. That is how I deal with the stress of my life. When I get tired, I take that rest. Without taking that rest, you are inefficient. The problem with people in their life today is they just keep on going. Keep pushing through the tiredness. You can't do that. That's not a smart way of working. Please excuse me, I've done this simile many times before, but it fits into this talk. How heavy is my glass of water? You know, I did this when I was in London in October at Imperial College London. Now, the Imperial College, a top sort of science university. And as soon as I did this usual technique, some smart aleck in the audience says about 150 grams, because they're scientists and they're probably absolutely accurate. But that's not what I meant. The story goes, how heavy is this glass of water? The longer you hold it, the heavier it feels. You hold it for 5 minutes, your arm aches. 10 minutes, you're in pain. 20 minutes, you're in agony and a very stupid monk. What should you do when it starts getting too heavy? Put it down. Just for a couple of seconds or 30 seconds. Put it down, rest your arm for 30 seconds. And when you pick it up again, yeah, it actually feels lighter. Honestly, it feels much lighter now. Why? Because your arm rested. Now it's easier to carry. That is how you deal with stress in life. Whatever responsibilities, duties, work you have to do, you're holding it, when it starts getting too heavy to bear, please put it down for a few minutes. Rest, relax. Then afterwards, when you pick it up, it's easier to carry. I invented that simile. Now apparently someone saw it on the Australian Stock Exchange site. How to deal with stress if you're a stockbroker in the modern European debt crisis economy. So it actually works. That is how you can do a lot without getting tired. So any of you kids here doing year 11, year 12, universities, PhDs or whatever, you will know if you keep working, there comes a time you're so tired, your brain is stuffed, it just cannot perform. You are wasting your time. Instead, just learn how to let things go. Put it down for a little while. And then when you pick it up afterwards, your brain is clear. Your mind is now efficient. A lot of times, the stress of life is avoidable. The stress causes you not to be productive. And all you really need to do is learn how to put things down and let things go for a little while. And trust that that is an investment. 5 or 10 minutes of rest, relaxation, whatever. Afterwards, your brain will be so efficient, more productive. The 5 or 10 minutes you spend in, say, meditation or in relaxation, that 5 and 10 minutes you spend in relaxation, you'll make up afterwards. You get 2 hours work done in an hour and a half of high quality too. Does that not make sense? That is how you learn to do lots and lots with no stress at all. You learn to relax. You don't fill your mind up with the past. You don't worry with the future. You've got so much more brain power. And last is you do things with a smile. When you put some happiness into whatever you are doing, you will find it's easier to do. A smile creates more energy. This was that little story I learnt. I didn't learn this at university. I learnt this in the monasteries of Thailand. This, to put the story in brief, we were having to do very hard physical work. 9 days of pushing wheelbarrows full of dirt. I never became a monk to be a labourer. You know, I became a monk to meditate, you know, to be inspired, you know, to sort of see beautiful lights in your meditation or hear wise words from great teachers, not to push wheelbarrows full of dirt. I was being exploited. And it got so bad one day, pushing another wheel. This was not sort of, you know, in nice sort of Australian climate. This was in the jungles, you know, very humid, hot, full of mosquitoes, you know, being bitten to death by mosquitoes in the jungles. And I was made in England. I'm not used to that sort of climate. And on one meal a day, and most of that meal was just sticky rice and frogs or rotten fish, I was malnourished in a climate I didn't like, pushing not just, you know, 6 hours, 8 hours a day, from 9 o'clock to maybe 10 in the evening. Well, that was really too much. And after a few days, I got really fed up. And, you know, what you do as a Westerner. Asians, they do it these days as well. When you get really fed up, you start swearing. So I was really swearing, stupid blue monks. And it's not like, it's the young monks, we're the ones who had to do this. The senior monks, they were just sitting down, having cups of tea, talking to people. And it was their ideas, their plans. They never did any work. They told us to do the work. Really unfair. You know what it's like, bosses? They have all these great ideas. But you're the guys who have to do it. That's why we've got a rule in monasteries. People know if this is Venerable Chunda here. If Venerable Chunda has an idea and it's passed, he has to do it. So you don't get many monks suggesting things. It's a great way. But anyway, that didn't work in monasteries in Thailand. I had to push these barrows and I was swearing. Okay, now swearing in English, because, you know, you think if you swear in English, the Thai monks won't understand. But, you know, they do. You know, they know you're sort of upset. So one monk came up to me once when I was really upset. And what he told me, thank you so much. I forget who that monk was, but, you know, sadhu, sadhu, you really taught me so much about life. He said, thinking about pushing the wheelbarrow is a hard part. Pushing it is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. Pushing it is easy. And that just clicked with me. All that thinking, I shouldn't be pushing this wheelbarrow. Why do I have to pull this wheelbarrow? How many more wheelbarrows have I got to push? That was what made it hurt. As soon as I just pushed the wheelbarrow and stopped thinking about it, the wheelbarrow actually became lighter, easier to push. Weird, but it's true. So if you've got an assignment to do at school, if you've got this big project, thinking about it is a difficult thing. Doing it is actually quite easy. You do that and it takes a huge amount of stress out of your life. Because how much time has that happened to you? You got this project. Friday afternoon, you can't give this project. This is my weekend. Why do you do this? This is unfair. You can't do this to me. Why me? Why not somebody else? I work so hard for you. See, that's the problem. The thinking about it. And you're just wasting so much time. Just do it. And you'll find It's hardly any stress at all. Remember that. Great teaching. Thinking about it is the hard part. Doing it is really easy. But giving public talks, simple. You just get up here and talk. I've seen you out there. You talk to each other. You do a good job. And I'm just talking to the microphone. Same thing, really. It's even better because the microphone doesn't talk back. But thinking about it, oh, I've got to give a public talk. Oh, what will they think about me? Will they like it? Will they not like it? That is the problem. So, don't think about it, just do it. And that lessens a huge amount of stress out of your life. So you can be a high achiever, you just do things. And what about fear of failure? That causes so much stress. What if it goes wrong? I've already mentioned a few talks ago, you know, good, bad, who knows. You don't know if it's, you know, going, there's no such thing about things going wrong. They just open up a different possibility for your future when so-called things go wrong. Nothing in my life has gone wrong. It's just different, that's all. You know, relationships went wrong, but that just opened the path for being a monk. So did it go wrong or did it not go wrong? Even like I had my great plan, and Dennis knows this, that I was second monk when I first came here. Now, second monk, just, you know, like, they don't have to do the work. You know, they don't have to be up front. They don't have to make decisions. It's much easier being a second monk. Just like Venerable Chundi, just sit there. And it's wonderful. And there's no work. That is the monk I wanted to be. Only the senior monk went and disrobed, and that just really just messed me up, no end. All my plans went wrong, and I had to be the senior monk. I had to open my mouth and do the talking. So, but did it go wrong? No, it doesn't matter what happens in life. You know, just, you know, you just start to see what you can do. There's an old saying, and I love this saying. They said, when the moon goes in, then the stars can shine. A beautiful simile, isn't it? When the moon disappears, then the stars can shine. So one leader disappears, and all the other, you stars, you can shine. So when I disappear, and then Chunda shines. Brilliant. And now, so you see that sort of positive attitude that you have towards life. And it means that no stress at all. Which means there's no such thing as something going wrong. The fear of something going wrong causes one of the greatest amounts of stress in life. So whatever I do in my life, you just go and do it. See what happens. In my life, nothing has gone wrong at all. They've just gone differently. Because I don't think in terms of right and wrong. It's just turning left, turning right. Which is the right way, which is the wrong way. Just one goes left, the other one goes right. So that way, I can make decisions so easily. Because I know we make a decision, see what happens, always make it work. So that way, there's no fear at all. And that's exactly what happened when that monk disrobed. I thought, well, you know, I'll start teaching. If I'm a great teacher, that's fine, I can inspire people. If I'm a hopeless teacher and everybody walks out and says, Ajahn Brahm giving the talk tonight, oh, I'm not going to stay here, I'm not going to waste my Friday night for that, that's even better. Then I can be a hermit and you can leave me all alone. So either way, you know, you don't fear failure. When you don't feel failure, it's amazing just how less stress you have in life. And it also means you just give it a try. You know, there was a lady here, you know, she was asking about trying to sort of, you know, work out this relationship with a guy. Should I call him? Should I not? Call him. Give it a try. Go for broke. And that's my nature in life. You fancy a guy sitting there, just go and ask him. But not us, not the monks, please. Just do it, for goodness sake. So, you know, a lot of the time, how much opportunities in your life have you wasted because you were afraid? And you look back upon your life afterwards, I should have given it a try. I should have just been courageous. No, okay, you know, I might fall flat on my face, but at least I tried and gave it a go. So please, the fear of failure. That's why I learned from this top business person. I went to this big retreat, leadership retreat in Hayman Island some years ago. And on the way back, you know, he said, in business, we don't call it failure anymore. We call it forward failure. I really love that idea. Forward failure. Oh, you make a mistake, but you go forward. You grow from it. You learn from it. You become a better person because you've tried, you've given it a go. Okay, it didn't work, but you've learned a lot. And the whole experience was worth it. That means that fear of, well, if I do this, what would happen? Disappears from your life. You go and give it a try. Remember, thinking about it is the hard part. Doing it is easy. So this is how we must learn in life. And I'm going to finish with a little story, because I wanted to put this story in, so it's a bit of a funny story, but it's a very good message in the end. I tell this at retreats. Very rarely, if ever, have I told it here. And the importance of learning these techniques in your life. You spend your whole time, wasting your time learning so many other things which aren't important. Learning how to deal with stress by letting go of the past, letting go of the future. Just, you know, just doing it, not thinking so much. Putting some energy into what you're doing. In other words, you know, no failure. Taking away, having an empty dustbin so the things in life, they just go right through you. These are such important parts of your life. So important. It reminded me of the story of the old sailor and the professor. This was a story of many, many years ago. When if ever you had to go overseas, there was no Qantas or Singapore Airlines or Virgin or anybody else. You had to go by boats. So this professor was going overseas to give a series of lectures. And when he went on one of these passenger liners, the first night at sea, he went, you know, after dinner, he went on deck, know, to take the evening air. And there he saw this old sailor looking up at the stars. It was a beautiful clear night. And he went up to the old sailor and decided to have a conversation. He said, "Old man, how long have you been at sea, you know, sailing these oceans?" He said, "Ever since I was a 14-year-old boy. And now I'm in my 60s. All my life I've been sailing." "Ah, amazing," said the professor. "You know, one of my hobbies is astronomy. You know, these stars guide your ships. You must know everything about astronomy. Let's talk about astronomy." And the old sailor said, What's astronomy?" "Now, the stars above you." "I don't know anything about the stars," said the old sailor. "What?" said the professor. "All those years at sea, and you've never ever bothered to learn about the heavens above you?" "No," said the sailor. "What a stupid old man," said the professor. "What a waste of a life, you stupid old man." And the professor walked away in disgust. The second night at sea, a very beautiful meal, the professor was on the deck again, and this time he saw the old sailor on duty looking down in the oceans. He decided to give the old man another chance. So he went up to the old man and said, "You know, one of my other hobbies is marine science. You know, all the animals which actually live, you know, in these great oceans. Now, you must have seen a lot of those animals in your years at sea. Let's talk about marine science." And the old sailor said, "Marine science? Don't know anything about that." "What?" said the professor. "All those years at sea, you've never bothered to learn about the flora and fauna which live in that great ocean you sailed upon?" "No," said the sailor. "You stupid old man. You stupid old man. What a waste of a life. What a waste of a life. I'm not going to talk with you again." The third night at sea. Don't worry, it's only four nights, so I'm almost there. The third night at sea. It was such an amazing dinner the cook made. The professor was in such a beautiful mood. And it was one of these perfect evenings at sea. Just a very gentle breeze just wafted over the ocean. And the professor decided to give the old man one more chance. And he said to the old man, he said, "Old man, you know these winds, they drive your ship. If there's a storm, it might even sink your ship. I realize you may not have to know much about astronomy or marine science, but as a sailor, you have to know about the weather. And as it happens, I am a professor of meteorology. I'm going to give some lectures on the weather systems in this famous university. Maybe we can compare notes. Please tell me what you know about the weather." And the old sailor said, "Professor, I know nothing about the weather. I can't even smell spell meteorology, whatever that means.
What? Said the professor. All those years at sea, you don't even know about the weather which drives your ship. Stupid old man. You're a stupid old man. Such a stupid old man. You've wasted your life. What a waste of life. What a waste of a life.
And he walked away, vowing never to talk to such an idiot again. The fourth night at sea, this is the last. The fourth night at sea, the professor never went on deck. He didn't even go for dinner because it was one of these rough nights at sea and he suffered from seasickness. Anything he would have eaten, he just vomited out again. So he stayed in his cabin. And the later the night got, the worse the storm became. And the ship started to roll backwards and forwards, forwards and backwards. More and more it started to roll in the terrible storm until he heard a terrible bang. Did that make you get excited? I'm very good at telling stories. Bang! Something had cracked. And then there was silence for a few moments. And then he heard people running right outside his cabin door. He was scared. So he opened his cabin door. And who do you think was running outside his cabin door? No other person than the old sailor he tried to have conversations with. The old sailor stopped and turned to the professor and said to the professor, "Professor, in all your years, have you ever learnt how to swim?" Professor said, actually, no. What a stupid professor. What a waste of a life. The ship's sinking. And the moral of that story is, if you're going to be a sailor, it is to hell with astronomy, marine science and the weather, but you have to know how to swim. And that's the same with life. All the other things you learn about life. Yeah, they may be interesting and enjoyable, but the most important thing to do is to learn how to keep your head above water in the stress of modern life. To be able to swim through all of these responsibilities and duties and worries which we have to deal with. If you learn that, then no one will ever say to you, "You stupid person, what a waste of a life. You're just having a breakdown." So please learn how to swim. Thank you for listening.
Okay, here we go. Some questions. First of all, Erwin from Singapore. What is the best way to meditate when we're feeling stressful? Can we start with metta meditation or body sweeping to help us? Feeling stressful, again, present moment awareness, first of all. Because when you're worrying about the past or the future, even you don't want to be where you are, that causes stress. And sometimes loving kindness meditation, that's a beautiful meditation, but it can be too much doing something. I have to do something. I have to do metta. I have to do body sweeping. Best do nothing. Just be here. Rest. You've already got stressed out, you know, by doing something. I've got to do metta meditation. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings. You know, it's very difficult to do when your boss has just scolded you. May all beings, but not him. No way. So the best way of meditating when you're feeling stressful, present moment awareness. So let go of all the past, let go of all the future, rest in this moment. Just as I mentioned with the final examinations at Cambridge story. Dilruk from Adelaide. Ajahn, you have never visited South Australia. When are you going to come and see us here in Adelaide? I have been to South Australia. I have been to Adelaide. When your karma is ripe, please don't stress me out. I live in the present moment. Today I'm in Perth. Who knows tomorrow? Anne Kaur from India. I am an engineer from India. I'm planning to get ordained in your monastery. What are the things I should consider before ordaining? Visa? It's hard to get to. No, the main thing you should consider before ordaining.
First of all, your responsibilities to your family seriously, because for a person just running away from responsibilities to their family, no way will they gain ordination here. If you've got a wife and kids, you've got those kids, you have to look after them, that's your responsibility. So anyone who wants to come to Montserrat, ask them, are your kids okay? Is your husband or wife okay with what you're doing? Because if you're irresponsible to your family commitments, there's no way that you can be responsible enough to live the life as a monk. Now, that's a basic thing there. So make sure you got all the permissions from your family, and to make sure that you're fit and healthy enough. Because, it is, you do have to be a fit and healthy person to become a monk. Obviously, if you've got some sicknesses and some old age, we can take a few, but not too many. And, start meditating, start being a good Buddhist, start keeping your precepts now. So you can train while you're still here. There was this story, this Burmese, a very amazing story. This Burmese man, years and years and years ago, he wanted to become a monk, but he was just a poor farmer. He had kids, had a wife. So he said, I want to ordain. So he said, that's my plan. It took him about 15 years to work hard, save up enough money, so his wife, had some money to look after her, and the kids, had all left school. He worked, and after 15 years or something, he'd saved enough money, his wife was financially secure, his kids had a good education, so he had permission to become a monk. About 6 months later, he became fully enlightened. And the monks, they just couldn't understand, how on earth could this person become enlightened so quickly? And when they investigated it, all the time that he was a farmer, he was being mindful, keeping precepts, meditating. He said even when he was pushing the plow behind the oxen, he was totally mindful, not thinking too much, not worrying. He'd done his preliminary training before he became a monk or a nun. It just shows you just how much you can do in this, your busy world. And he worked really, really hard because he had to get the money. And still he could make huge amounts of progress. So, Angkor from India, while you're waiting for that moment when you're ordained, don't think your practice starts when you shave your head and wear the brown robe. Your practice is now. Meditate, let go, all the things I've said here, you can practice. And then when you do manage to ordain as a monk or a nun, you're way ahead, and it's just a short distance the rest of the way. And lastly, Karin from Holland. It sometimes looks like people are less aware of their acts, fears, behavior, also having less stress. Not being aware of that either. Am I wrong? Sometimes if you're not aware of what you're doing to others or what you're doing to yourself, in the short term, there's no stress, but when people find out what you've been doing, or when you find out what you've been doing, or your body finds out what you're doing, then all that stress, which you've just been ignoring, comes and hits you. In other words, yes, you may be not really aware of how your speech affects other people, but it eventually comes back to you. It's called the law of karma. So you may avoid the stress in the short term by just being stupid, or just by being unmindful, or being insensitive, but eventually that comes back and hits you very hard. So it's like, you're getting in debt, and eventually you have to pay those debts off. So, it may appear that people are not aware of their acts and fears and behavior. It may appear they're having less stress now, but it's coming. The check is in the mail. Or not the check, what you might call it, the summons from the police is in the mail. They're after you. Be careful. They're coming soon. So karma does actually catch up with you. And that's why people, they may appear they're having no stress, and then they sort of have a heart attack or they have a breakdown. You've seen people like that sometimes, the people you think the least likely. They seem to be so stress-free, but they are got the stress inside of them. Or it's coming. So this is a way to be able to be a high achiever, just like myself, high achieving monk, a high achiever president of our Buddhist society, a high achiever in the world. And somebody just told me recently that Mark Zuckerberg is a Buddhist. He had his house blessed by Thai monks in California. See, so high achievers, Buddhist monks, Buddhist lay people, Buddhist women, You can be the high achievers of our world. Is any one of you going to be contesting the Prime Ministership of Australia? I heard that Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard, so it's about time we had a Buddhist president. Prime Minister Dennis, you want to sort of put your hand up?
Ah, oh, come on.
Ronnie, do you want to be Prime Minister of Australia?
Oh, come on.
Anyway, so be a high achiever. Okay, I think that's enough for me for now.